new day. Yes, it is.
For 12 Pack Radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12 Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news in the home of the Beta Rank College Football Statistical Model. We are coasting. We got like Dr. Feelgood blasting in the background. We're on this train that is going to make a screeching halt in week zero very soon. But before we get there, we are going to talk again, taking deep dives through two new teams. We're going to do Arizona State and Oregon State. And to do that and talk Pac-12 football and look at fall camp, which has started. We're going to look at the Big Ten media deal. And to do all of that, I'm joined as always by Mr. Rob Bowron from Sharp College Football. What is going on, Rob?
Oh, not much. I'm about to disappear out into the wilderness and do some backpacking. So I finished all 30 preview videos. Like I'm feeling good.
There you go. Well, build that log cabin, get some Wi-Fi in there just in case these media deals drop. Thanks everybody for joining us. You can find us on Twitter at 12packradio, 12PAC Radio. SharpCollegeFootball.com is where you can find all the beautiful advanced stats that we'll be using in this show. And basically, advanced stats for any team that you've ever wanted for free, SharpCollegeFootball.com and our Sharp College Football YouTube page, where Rob, as he has just mentioned, just rocked through 30 previews of teams as we go. Rob, let's start right out of the gate. We got fall camp going. I was excited. I'm not going to lie, though. Not as many beat reporters, you know, as there used to be. So it's been a little bit more difficult to get the news that we're kind of used to when it comes to, who's in the first string, who's the second string, who's fighting, who's up, who's down, like that. That kind of stuff matters because it helps our projections as we move into the beginning of the season. So I just want to give a shout out. I think it's Christian Capel, the beat writer for Washington. His stuff on The Athletic is excellent. It's very good. Michael Lev, as always, is excellent. So I just want to highlight some of the writers that are doing a good job. If I missed a couple, it's just because I haven't seen you on Twitter recently. So don't take it personally. Antonio Morales at USC that does The Athletic stuff. And then Angie Burchado over at Beaver Blitz is very good. She's really plugged in the program. So shout out to all those sources where our fall previews are going to begin here. One of the things I wanted to highlight as we start, Rob, was there was some question as we're looking at kind of the developments of fall camp of who the quarterback would be for Oregon State and Arizona. And it seems as if, like, you know, at the Pac-12 media days, you know, Michael Lev had talked about this before during spring camp, that it really looked like Jaden Delora was the guy. And for all intents and purposes, like, he's getting the majority of the snaps. He is the person that they've put in the driver's seat. If he loses this, it will be because he lost it, not because Jordan McLeod beat him out. Which if there's a real competition, that's kind of exciting, right? I think it's more of an upside there because there is a floor for Delora. It's fairly high. We have that going on over at Oregon State. We thought a little bit. I was wondering if Tristan Jebbia was going to push Chance Nolan. I just have not been that impressed with Nolan. I mean, obviously the running game for Oregon State is excellent, but looks like Nolan, same thing. He's the guy. If Jebbia pushes, it will be because Nolan has kind of been a mess in camp, and that doesn't seem like it's been the case. Anything jump out to you there, Rob? It was nice to see clarity at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, I thought McLeod played better than Delora in the spring game, but it's also possible that Delora is, you know, really still picking up the playbook. The main thing with Fish is, last season, he seemed to have really settled on Gunnar Cruz. And in some ways, you could argue that a lot of the season, he almost had like Gunnar Cruz tunnel vision. And, you know, like Cruz had every opportunity to, you know, hold on to the job, played so, so poorly in games. And then as soon as McLeod got hurt, Cruz got first crack again, and he was awful up until he got hurt. And so like having watched, as our friends like Hippolyte pointed out, like having watched Fish make a bad decision once, you just really want to make sure that like they're making the right to like that, you know, if you're going to settle on the guy that like you don't have time, like, and Delora's got far better, like has looked far better in actual football games than Gunnar Cruz. So I don't want to like make it seem like I'm making that comparison. But I think you're right. Like, Delora is going to have every opportunity to hold on to this job. If it is, he will, you know, like if he does lose it, it will be because he lost it through poor play. The competition might be for number two between McLeod and Fifita, the freshman they brought in, who is like all of 5'6", I think. But can sling it and was playing, you know, played pretty well in practice today, according to all the observers.
Shifting over to USC, just basic fall camp notes. These things, by the way, are going to continue to sharpen up as the more and more practices. Most of the camps have been, you know, day one, day two. I think Arizona's at day four. Washington, I think, is at day three at this point. So, you know, shifting over to ASU, we saw Jordan Addison on the field. That was exciting. USC is writing checks that they can't cash, apparently. I guess, like, just talking about USC for a sec, I was listening to the Pac-12 Apostles, and they were talking about Pac-12 Media Day and how, you know, most people come in wearing the polo shirts and, you know, it's like, it's kind of a vacation. Like, you know, it's nice to talk football. People take it fairly casually. And then in comes USC and they're like suit and tie. And they like, they specifically are dressing up more than everybody else. And their official Twitter account, when they tweet out the Pac-12, they do it with a lowercase p now. Like, it is so petulant. For a program that went 4-8 last year, and a program that is consistently underperformed, you know, like take a minute, you know, like you don't need to make these statements all around. Like, you're not in the Big Ten for the next couple of years. Your defense is going to be bad. So let's maybe just tone it down a little bit before we start the season, for the love of all that's good in the world. I don't know. Am I being too sensitive?
They absolutely refuse to do that. I mean, I mean, USC fan, I mean, you cannot, I mean, my, oddly enough, like, I was having this conversation, my CEO and I spent a lot of time together when I was out in LA recently. He's a big USC fan booster. And he's like, no, like, USC's absolutely winning the conference this year. And I was like, that defense was really, really bad. Right. Like, and the fallback answer from everyone is like, oh, they're the most talented team. And just to be clear,
are they?
That has never impeded USC from falling flat in their face in the past. So I was talking about this at the end of last season with Grinch anyway at Oklahoma. I think there are real questions about Alex Grinch. I think this is a real prove it year for him, whether Riley sticks with him. And so I think people have these assumptions, right, that like USC's bringing in like a defensive ace in Alex Grinch. His time at Oklahoma was up and down, and last year mostly down compared to what you'd like to see out of him. So I'm like Utah, people should not undersell the Utes. Like, the Utes are bringing back a lot on the offensive side of the ball. They have tremendous staff continuity. They're bringing back Rising, you know, who absolutely knows the ins and outs of the offense. You know, like, as I was going through and listening to somebody talking about like who the Utes are going to have at linebacker, I'm like, yeah, they're just going to be fine. Right. They're just going to be fine. You'd like a little more on defensive line, you know, maybe, but I'm sure someone will emerge and they'll be like, Utah goes in, it wins in Florida. Like, they should be okay. Yeah. I think USC needs to tone it down a bit. Right. Like, I'm excited to see this offense in particular. I think this offense could really click and put it together. But I'm definitely in the camp of the defense is maybe not there.
Yeah. I mean, they were the guy that showed up to like the Sandals Resort, right, in a full suit. And you're like, come on, man, we're in the Bahamas. Like, just chill out for a sec. Like, you know, that bothered me a little bit. You know, moving over to a few more fall camp notes. One of the things that was a total bummer was Elifosio, the inside linebacker from Washington. You know, the news came out that he's likely not back until at least October, which would make me think late October. Which is a bummer, right? And like, it's interesting because they have some interesting pieces at linebacker that can fill them. They got Washington, got Cam Bright and a couple other players from the transfer portal. They got the All-American Conference USA player from UAB that's pushing on that second line, you know, for trying to get into that first string. So there's some pieces there, but damn, you know, like I just he's been there for a while. He's kind of been the heart of that defense. Well, I mean, like the secondary is really the heart, but like Elofoshio, I think is a leader on that team. And yeah. I really hope he gets back soon. At Washington, the quarterbacks, the order was Michael Penix, Dylan Morris with Sam Heward third in the first practice. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Well, they were rotating this week.
Yes.
So the next one, Heward got for, I think, or maybe Dylan Morris got first snaps, but yeah, they were rotating. So this week, I mean, what, I don't know what happened today, but I thought maybe at the end of like this week, they might start to suss it out a little bit, but we'll see.
I don't know, man. Yeah. And you're right. You're right. They did talk about cycling through that stuff, but first day and you got Sam Heward playing with the rookies on like the field that the media isn't on. Like
he's already suffered enough.
Yeah, I know, for the love of God. Yeah, we'll keep a lookout for that. Hopefully that is a really competitive race because you want that. Like these are three really fascinating quarterbacks at Washington. Oregon State running backs are looking good. You know, count me a surprise. Although Trey Lowe is starting to make a little bit of noise there, which is kind of exciting. And Damian Martinez, the true freshman. So I expect, you know, surprise, shocker, you know, expect Oregon State's running game to be good again, which might boost them up a little bit on some people's rankings as the years, as the season progresses. Anything else? That's kind of all I have so far. You know, I'm keeping my spidey senses out for other camp notes. So if you have any, by the way, if you're covering a team or if you're listening to the show and like, and we don't cover a player that's just killing it in fall camp, like let us know. I mean, there are those camp heroes, you know,
do not hit me up on Twitter with the, like, I mean, cause every beat, right? Like every coach and beat writer is like, oh, like there'll be somebody that's been like working their butt off. Right. That's like a walk on.
Yeah.
And like, they'll take an opportunity to like talk him up. And then like the fan base, like will like sit around all year and be like, oh, I wonder when they're going to play. Like, right. Like, and they won't.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Like, so do not hit me up with like random walk on, like was getting talked up by the coach on like, you know, on filler day in camp. Right. Like, I am interested. Like, I am excited to see, like, I think of like Bradley and I, who really started to emerge like prior to 2019, like in the spring and then in fall camp, there was starting to be a lot of chatter around him, around, you know, Utah coming into the year as somebody that could break out. That's the kind of stuff that you want to sort of, you know, maybe hear and see. It was interesting. Pro Football Focus had EJ Smith as a potential breakout player from Stanford, the running back. And I was like, in my head, I was like, yeah, I mean, his tape looks great. But has got Stanford's offensive line.
Yeah.
It was one of those ones of like, oh man, he's probably going to play in the NFL, but he's going to rush for, like, he's not going to do anything in college.
What, it's so depressing. Get it together, Stanford. Yeah, totally agree. The other thing too, is if there are transfers into your program that like legitimately are pushing, like I don't want, like you're mentioning, Rob, the, oh, so-and-so is working his tail off and like he has a real chance to push. I want this transfer is in the ones, right? And he like immediately stepped on and he started, you know, cracking skulls. That's what I want to know. So if you got your head on a swivel, let us know. Happy to mention it on the show. And it's always good to put in the file in our spreadsheets here. Rob, there's been a little bit of news on the broadcast, you know, angle of who's going where in the conference and stuff. What do we got coming out of the Big Ten here?
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, and people keep doing, like, you remember like when Kevin Warren, like, man, Kevin Warren really puffed his chest out at like Big Ten media days and everyone like read his comments as like, oh, they're going to still be expanding. And I was like, no, you misread it. Like they're not. And then there were all these like walkbacks from like Big Ten presidents and athletic directors. Like, actually, we're not really looking to expand at all. And then people had, again, like the Nebraska president today, like, or Nebraska AD the other day, and said like, oh, there's like big changes coming. And everybody's like, oh, realignment. And I'm like, no, suckers, like, this is going to be governance. Like, it sounds boring, but it's going to change the sport. But the news that dropped today, I think, is really important. And this is somewhat expected. It matches up what had been leaked a little bit earlier out, which is that Fox, if it's the Big Ten contract, the three major, and there's going to be three major networks on it, and it's Fox, CBS, and NBC, with Fox taking, you know, the first pick for their big noon game. And then I like DBS getting the second pick for their 3:30 slot, which used to go to the SEC. And then NBC looking for a primetime game to butt up against Notre Dame games. That's really interesting because the name that you don't see there, which has had a contract with ESPN or with the Big Ten for 40 years, is ESPN. But to be fair, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to look at this as if like, oh man, shots fired, right? Like Fox keeps ESPN out of, you know, the Big Ten contract. And I don't think that's necessarily the case because I think if you look at what the ESPN has in signing the SEC deal that they have, they're going to basically take CBS's 3:30 SEC time slot, right? And then they're also going to have the pick of either, because they also wholly own the ACC, the pick of either the best ACC or SEC game, likely an SEC game again, to put in prime time. And they've largely, and I mean, like it's hard to remember that, a time that ESPN really went toe to toe with Fox for Big Noon. They've sort of just ceded that space to Fox. And so I think this is actually more of a case of like CBS and NBC were willing to outbid ESPN because ESPN likely already has great content for those time slots that CBS and NBC want, right? Because I think a lot of people are going to look at, like I say this and I want to frame it this way because I think people are going to frame this that Fox and ESPN, which like traditionally in a lot of cases have split rights, right? You know, people want to look at this and say like, oh, like that's not going to be the case going forward. It's going to be all Fox and all ESPN. And that might be somewhat true. And that could certainly play out. Like, I don't want to dismiss and say that's not likely. It's just, I don't think it's the most likely scenario here. My expectation would still be that ESPN and Fox split on the new Pac-12 deal. Like they're going to need, now Fox probably needs less inventory now, but ESPN needs inventory for ESPN, for ESPN2, right? Like those all show, you know, there's four games, right? You know, there's, you know, two games right there on the ESPN, you know, networks. And there's a game on FS1 that you have to fill out there still. And I think they likely split is my guess. Like now people are going to take this and look and say like, oh, this is it. Like ESPN is going to sign like all of the Pac-12 or something like that. And Fox is going to sign all of the Big 12. But I actually don't think that setup would really meet either network's needs very well. I think when you look at like, I think people are overhyping this like battle to the death, right? Like it's clearly not a battle to the death. Like Fox is not buying all of the Big Ten inventory like CBS and NBC are in, right?
Yeah, I mean like Coke and Pepsi probably high-five themselves all the time, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, no, we I mean like it, Fox, yeah. Fox and ESPN worked together to kill Texas, you know, the Texas to the Pac-12 deal years ago. You know, because NBC was going to make that deal and Fox and ESPN worked together to kill it.
So does that like, what's the big takeaway for the Pac-12 given all that information?
So the big takeaway, I mean, one, it's good for them because ESPN might want a bigger selection of games to put on because they're going to like, yeah, ESPN, ABC is going to have games in that 3:30 window, right? So they're going to have three games to fill there. One of those is going to your top billing SEC game. Another one might go to your second billing SEC game, that kind of thing, right? But they might want another, like, I mean, in addition to the ACC, they might want another game there. And that could either come, those games could either come from the Pac-12 or the Big 12. But there's really no one positioned to cover West Coast prime like the Pac-12 still. And largely, I think a lot of numbers have been thrown around. I don't think those are accurate. And even some of the numbers I've seen from like those Navigate numbers, I don't think the original ones were done very well. And I said that when they came out because they had the Pac-12 making the same amount of money with USC and UCLA gone as the Big 12 was going to make with Texas and Oklahoma gone. And that didn't make sense. So I think the Pac-12 is in a decent position. I think the fear, if you're a Pac-12 fan, like the one thing that could really screw things up is if, like, the truth of it is that ESPN and Fox are really not actually going to play nice, because then they would have to break up the conference in order to fill their West Coast prime needs. And that, like, I think that is the less likely scenario, because it would really like finding a home within ESPN or Fox for that to work would be nearly impossible. Like, because, like, in that case, like, what are you going to do? Like, hive off part of the Pac-12 and, like, have them join the ACC, right? To get on ESPN, or, like, ESPN buys out all of the Big 12. They don't want all of the Big 12. Like, no way. Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll take a look and see what else leaks as things continue. I'm starting to see all these stories percolate on Twitter, you know, all the details of the television deals, etc. So more to come on that front. Let's get into the Arizona and the Oregon State deep dives here. We'll start with Oregon State, and we'll do it right after this.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking Oregon State football. We're taking a deep dive into the program. And similar like we did last time, Rob, instead of giving a grade to each, you know, each position group, we're going to just call it a strength or a weakness. We're going to use ambiguous terms so that possibly we can, you know, disagree on stuff. We can kind of keep things relative here in terms of, you know, program to program. What's a strength? What's a weakness? Oregon State, you know, coming out of the gate with just an excellent running game. But I think everything starts at the quarterback position. Chance Nolan, like we had mentioned at the beginning of the show, likely the QB1 here, pretty much has that locked down. I think it's a weakness. I just do not believe, you know, like, look, Nolan made a huge leap between the first year, you know, out of JUCO during the COVID year. He was a disaster. You know, just bad decisions, bad completion rate. Looking this year, like, you know, this past year, he was fine, but that offense was run on the ground, and Nolan fit the part sometime, but there were like multiple games where, I mean, he had 10 passes and he completed like 6 of them, and most of them were for about 8 yards, or not 8 yards, but like 6 yards. And I'm just, I just don't think he brings a lot to the table to Oregon State. And I was so disappointed that they didn't go out in the portal and find somebody that can really open the offense even more. But I mean, maybe he grows into the role again. He makes another leap. I think this is his last year. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one option that you sort of like need to keep in the back of your mind, of course, is like the big leap that Jake Luton made in year two. Right.
But Luton was like balls of the wall. Right.
Like
ball.
Luton was more like making mistakes. Like, I don't think they really rely on Chance Nolan for much at all. I mean, part of it is they were quite good running the football last season, right? Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. This is the number 16 overall offense last year in beta rank. They were number 11 in effective rush. I mean, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. Where they sucked though is like 42 explosive drives. And given how well they run the ball, the fact that they like, I mean, and you could sort of like, we sort of like, they don't have Utah's explosive running game. Let's start there. And they also don't have like, they did not hit a bunch of like big passing plays over the middle the way Utah did. But man, if you put like one wide receiver who could, because like play action's going to be there, right?
Yeah.
For them, they just really struggled. Like they really could not get that. Now I think they have a really good tight end and Luke Musgrave, but yeah, I mean, like, I don't think the wide receivers are particularly good, and I don't think Nolan's really good either.
And it's weird, and I know people that are looking at this, if you're looking at his stats, they look fine, right? Like 64% completion rate, 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. So like, he absolutely made a big leap between the COVID year and 2021. I mean, we're still in the COVID year, but you know what I mean. But if you watch those games, there are multiple times where you're just watching the offense and you're just going like, man, he isn't like blowing the lid off of anything. You could tell that like that teams were playing around his weaknesses, right? Or lack of strengths might be the better way of putting it, where like, you know, he can throw it down the field, but not great. You know, yeah. great at it. Like, even though like 8.4 yards per attempt, like that seems like a lot, but I watched those games and I need to see it with my own eyes if he can really make that offense grow more. Because if he does, I think now you're starting to talk about Oregon State as a bowl team. Because, and we'll get to the defense here. The defense is a bit of a mess. You know, it has him listed as like a sophomore, so he must have a couple of years left. He was a JUCO transfer. Maybe he transferred in early. Oregon State fans, if you want to explain that to me, go ahead and do so. Anything else on the quarterback here before we get into the running backs? Because I think this is fun.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, like, Nolan, wasn't asked to push. I mean, even though that 8.4 per, right, like, with as much as they're running the football, he wasn't asked to do a whole lot, right? And that's where, like, you know, with Jebbia, I mean, it'll be interesting because, like, I will say this about Jonathan Smith, right? Like, it's not like if Jebbia is playing better than Nolan, like, Jebbia is going to play, you know, like, I'm with you. Like, it's just frustrating that this is where we find ourselves, that, like, Smith has not been, like, they have not been able to cobble or recruit or get through the transfer portal anybody.
Yeah, it's like, come on, guys. Like, and who knows? I you know, I'm not there at recruiting. I'm not buried in that. It's something that we follow on this show. But it looks frustrating. I'm kind of bummed about it. But we'll see. Maybe it's possible that, to your point, he makes another leap, like you saw with Luton, and Luton certainly made the leap. But you could kind of see it with Luton. The first year, you're like, oh man, this guy can chuck that ball around. It might be the other player, but he's willing to do it. And I didn't see those reins, you know, let go with Nolan, and they didn't ask him to do a lot. You know, moving over to the running back position here, Rob. So I mean, I guess you have to call it a strength. Angie Machado was talking about, you know, Trey Lowe starting to really make some noise in practice. But one of the things, and she mentioned this too, it's like, and she said that first statement, and then the second statement was like, which is good because we didn't see a lot of production, you know, out of him. Now, obviously, BJ Baylor, whom, by the way, I didn't think was going to be nearly as good as Jamar Jefferson. I was wrong. That was a take that I had that certainly didn't come to fruition. I do think that the offensive line, we'll get to that, is like a big part of this. But, you know, you have a couple transfers here. You have Lowe, who was a transfer last 2 years ago, I think. He came over from Washington. You have the South Carolina transfer. You have the Georgia State transfer. Like, they clearly wanted to bring players in here. And I think as much as we complain about Oregon State not getting into the transfer portal for a quarterback, they certainly did that here. And I just trust them, right? I just think at this point they get the benefit of the doubt.
No, I mean, like, these guys have another year in the weight room, you know, like another year, you know, of what has been really good coaching, you know, in the running game. Like, I think they're going to be fine. Like, this I feel like is like going to be a B plus. One of these guys is going to step up and be pretty good. And then the other guy is also going to get a bunch of carries too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Deshaun Fenwick, you know, is pushing for some time here. Like I had mentioned in the podcast before, like, I don't think Damian Martinez is going to see the field. Like, he'll see the field. He will see the field. I don't think he's the number one guy, but I just, like, you know, plant that flag now, or like plant that seed, right, and watch that tree grow in a year or two where you're like, to mix my metaphors, like, I'm gonna cash in that stock because I bought it low. I do think
Nolan carried it 70 times last year too. I mean, like, not that he is like some massively athletic dude, but he's pretty athletic for his size.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and that's something that you have to take into consideration as you're taking a look at what they're able to do on that front. You know, shifting over to the offensive line, I love, like, if you've listened to this podcast, you know that we have like our I Heart Mahalchuk t-shirts, and they're up and they're framed and they're signed by him. I mean, he's just such a great offensive line coach, and I've just been shocked at that Oregon State has been able to keep him. And B, right? Like, I mean, did he, Who knows? Who knows? Maybe he's like, you know, maybe he's a total jerk in the background and people have to deal with him. But I haven't heard that at all, actually. Like,
he seems like one of those guys. Like, he was at Cal and then he was at Arizona and then he's at like Oregon State. Like, he seems to like just enjoy just getting to show up and work and not have to deal with drama.
Which, hey, I can appreciate that, right? Like, you know, no stress. just get good big guys and get them out there. And there's not as much pressure to recruit the best possible blue chip, you know, line, which I hope he does at some point. Like, he has such a good track record. But if you take a look at this, I mean, you return Joshua Gray, you return Marco Brewer, who started at guard when Levin Good got hurt. Who's the center? Center returns. Brandon Kipper returns at right guard. He played tackle. I think this is great. Like, this is a strength. Like, they return enough players. They have enough people in the two deep, and they got one of the best coaches in the country at offensive line. Like, right? I mean, I think that's.
Yeah, don't overthink it. Like, this is Oregon State's offensive line is going to be fine. Do not hurt yourself trying to, like, I mean, the one thing, of course, is like, if there were a lot of injuries, like, sure, like, things could go very sideways. But like, my guess is they're going to be fine on the offensive line.
Here's why I think they're not going to win a bowl or get to a bowl. If you take a look at the wide receivers, and you had just mentioned this.
Woof.
Yeah. And even as I was listening to Angie on her show, you know, she's talking about, like, so there was this, like, they have gone to the transfer portal, right? Treshawn Harrison, Micah Tung are former four-star players. Tyjon Lindsey was a high three-star player that they brought in from Nebraska. Like, on paper, there's pedigree and talent here. I just haven't seen it, though. Like, and it doesn't seem like they have it. Like, the coaches were in the ear of Harrison in the last practice because he didn't finish his route. And, like, if you take a look at his body type and, like, what he brings to the table athletically, it kind of, I don't know, right? This is one story out of practice, but, like, I assume that Harrison was going to, day one, boom, he's going to be on there and be a force. And that hasn't been the case. And now, you know, I don't know if they're going to get separation from corners, and I don't trust Chance Nolan. So, like, I just,
right.
There is a world where you have Iowa light, but with a, you know, like, imagine Iowa with Jonathan.
No. Whoa. Like, let's not compare them to the Bryant Ferentz special. All right. Like, this is still a Jonathan Smith offense.
No, you're right. You're right. I more mean, like, in terms of, like, the pass run split, like
3 yards in a cloud of dust. And
yeah, this is way more creative. Imagine Iowa with him, though. Man, I would be awesome. Like, he'd be the perfect offensive coordinator for that program.
What I would love is, like, I mean, look, they're likely not going to get, like, the, you know, the Chad Ochocincos, like, in the transfer portal like they did under Dennis Erickson. But, I mean, not, they didn't have the portal back in those days, but they're likely not going to get those transfers.
They had other means, Rob. They had other
means. Yes. Like, if it was Dennis Erickson, those guys probably got paid. But, like, man, like, the guy, like, what I don't know, they, like, why don't they have, like, some, like, shifty, undersized slot receiver that is just a pain to cover? That's what I don't get about this coaching staff is, like, and Jonathan Smith, and I saw this in his, like, first or second game, like, I mean, that game at Ohio State. I mean, he hit the Buckeyes with a couple tunnel screens in that game. And I just look at this and I'm like, why don't they have that guy? Why don't they have a Britton Covey type, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, in this offense, in addition, because I do think Luke Musgrave is pretty good. And I think he could break out a bit this year. I don't expect them, we should say fully, like, I fully don't expect them to get, like, an X wide receiver that's going to be a difference maker. But, like, why they can't go out and get, like, an undersized, like, water bug type guy, I don't understand. Like, that's what this offense really needs.
Well, they had the ultimate water bug last year in Champ Fleming. And, like, every year at a camp, it's like, oh, Champ Fleming. I'm like, dude, the guy's like 5'6", 130 pounds. Like, he can't be the guy. Like, he can be fun. And he's, you know, like, and dude, what?
He only had 15 receptions last year, right? Like, I just don't think he's the guy. I don't think it's about size. I don't think he was the guy.
No. And, like, I mean, the guy was just, I mean, props to him, right? Like, because putting your body on the line in a dangerous sport at that size is that it takes some balls, dude. But he's gone. And to your point, I don't know where that water bug guy is. Like, right, they still have Tyjon Lindsay, Anthony Gold, and I think it's Silius Bolden. But we'll see. We'll see. I think you're going to see a lot of creative run schemes, a lot of ways to, like, you know, play action. But, like, you just don't quite have the talent isn't there. And maybe Musgrave gets like 800 yards and like 8 touchdowns. But I think in this offense, that might be the ceiling for him.
I mean, like, if Musgrave, like, if, like, this offense is going to be better than, like, I mean, like, if one of their, you know, if they're wide receivers again combined for, like, you know, like their top two wide receivers combined for like 70 catches ish again, and then but Musgrave's able to double his production, like, they're doing pretty good then.
Yeah. But I mean, he had one touchdown last year.
No, they definitely need to find more. I mean, I get it. When you run the ball as well as they did, right? Like, just punch it in. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, he in particular, I think, could be more dangerous in the passing game. But, like, that's something that they need to find a way to do more. They do need to find, I think, with Musgrave in particular, find a way to utilize him more.
Here's one more question before we go to the defense. Are they getting too cute with Jack Coletto? Right? Like, anytime they're in like a position where they need, like, he's always on the field, and it's kind of like, it's a cool story, and he's back, by the way, and he's like playing tight end and running back and quarterback and punt blocker. But when you take a look at that team, it's like, I mean, this is a gimmick, and I just want your offense to work. You know, like, I don't know. If it works, it works. And he has been really good at what he's doing, but it just strikes me as like too cute by half. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, it's a little too obvious what they're doing when he comes in, right? Yeah. I mean, if they can use him and install, like, what I think would be more interesting if they used him and installed some different type of packages with him, like maybe something like a flex bone or something like where he's literally running something that it's not just like, oh, Jack Coletto's coming in. Another, like, because Chance Nolan already runs the football a decent amount, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, so like if you have Coletto in where it's something else you have to scheme for, whether it's like some version of an option or something like that.
He just strikes me as like, you know, that eager beaver hire that you get. And he does everything. He gets coffee. Yeah. He works his tail off. You're like, this guy's awesome. And then you promote him like to accounting and he just craps the bed. Like, he just can't handle, yeah, like, you know, he can handle the tasks that you know, there's a ceiling on the tasks that you can do. Anyway, we'll see. It would be nice to see him in one position do some cool stuff. Let's move to the defense here, because, by the way, like, I know we're kind of dumping on Oregon State, but I view Oregon State as like the older brother that you have that is just so smart. And you're like, just if you just take a few more steps, you will be awesome. You know, like, they just don't take the damn steps. And here we are.
Well, we're huge fans. I mean, like, that's the part, like, I mean, I say that is like, we're huge Jonathan Smith fans. Like, this is an incredible rebuilding job to get them to where they are. And now you want them to like take the next step. Right. Like, because, I mean, it's a, like, he on his own is a good story, right? Like, he's an alum, he comes back, like, he's not like your prototypical like coach in a lot of ways,
yeah,
right? Like, he's not out there like trying to get on as much TV as possible, that kind of thing. He comes back, totally cleans up like an absolute dumpster fire that he inherits from Gary Anderson, like, turns one of the toughest jobs in college football into an extremely respectable team. And they're just like, all right, guys, like, this, like, because how much fun would it be if they were really good? Like, yeah. And I'm not saying all the time, but like, where they could put together a really good year every 4 years or something, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And then, you know, we've already talked about the lack of hire at the defensive coordinator position. They hire within, which, yeah, we both are on the record of thinking that's a bad idea. When you take a look at the defensive line, I mean, I've seen these names for a while. Like, Isaac Hodgins at defensive end was injured last year, so he does return. Simon Sandberg, I've seen that. You know, Cody Anderson at the tackle. Now, they have to replace the big Minnesota transfer, so that's a problem, because that was one of the things where if you took a look at that defense over the last couple of years, when they have a big tackle who's solid, you know, like, at least you get that plug in the middle. Maybe you get a little push up the center. we'll see what they're able to do on this front. I think this is a weakness, but like what was their rush, you know, their rushing defense? What did that look like last year?
They were at 78. Okay. They're at 94 overall in beta rank, and then 78 in effective rush, 101 in effective pass. They really, I mean, they struggled. They did not stop the run well. They did not get pressure on the quarter. I mean, like, if you just look at, like, their tackles for the loss number, right? Like, it's all linebackers until you get, like, to one defensive lineman last season, Shad, and then a bunch more linebackers, right? and look, in some systems, that's the way it's just going to be. Because your guys are playing two gap, and the linebackers are the ones that are going to be looking to come downhill. But these guys aren't really. I mean, if they are attempting to play two gap, that's a really bad idea. Because none of these guys can play two gap. But they're just getting. I mean, they're just getting beat. Like they're not a force to be reckoned with either rushing the passer, or in the run game.
They're bringing in, you know, FCS tackles. I don't know. I'm just. I'm worried, Rob. If you go to the linebacking core, you know, Addison Gumbs is gone. You know, Omar Spates does return, and he's somebody to definitely like. If
he's got, he puts up numbers. I mean, but it feels like the leading scorer for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Right. Like somebody's got to put up numbers.
Riley Sharp, Kiri Fisher. I don't know. I think this whole defense, like, you know. Spoil everything. Like this whole defense, I think is going to be bad. And I mean, the one thing, like they bring in like Andrew Chatfield. He's a Florida transfer that sat out last year. So that could be interesting. But I mean, between that, like, if you look, there's like no depth in the secondary. They were like starting walk-ons and it's just, this defense is just like, can it be worse than last year? I mean, it could always be worse, right? Like Don Pelham, you know, was the defensive coordinator. Like everybody was like, oh, Brady Hoke's really bad. And then Don Pelham came or vice versa. I forgot how it would, but like, you know, things can always go bad to worse.
Yeah, no, Brady Hoke was the next one and he was terrible. No, I mean, this is a really, really bad defense. I mean, in theory, like, look, it maybe can't get any worse, but it's hard. Like what's hard is like seeing it get significantly better, you know, like without some significant schematic changes. Right.
We need to take advantage of this by looking at the win totals, but the game totals. I want to see the line on games where Oregon State plays a team that can throw the ball, but can't defend the run. Cause you're going to see like 45, you know, 53, there's going to be a couple games like that because the defense is so bad and because Oregon State is so effective at the running game. Like there's going to be a couple games that you'll be able to pick off from a gambling standpoint. But I like just looking at this team, do you think this team makes a bowl? I find it really difficult. Like it's not a complete team.
Well, I mean, look, there's like the Pac-12 mostly really stunk last year. So let's start there. You know, and look, this team last season had a terrible defense and still won a bunch of games, right?
Yeah.
And they had Chance Nellen at quarterback and still won a bunch of games. I got him projected at when you can in the FCS game with just over 6 wins. I think they can get to a bowl. You know, the tough thing for them is they can't go 0-2 versus Boise and Fresno. They got to win one of those. Like that might really determine a lot for them.
They got to go to Fresno also. That game's going to be fun. Gosh, that week two, there's just like all these little sneaky non-conference games that are super fun. Boise State, Fresno State, gosh darn. USC, Utah, Washington at Arizona State. The one thing is they get Arizona State late.
I mean, that's a big advantage.
Yeah.
Because Arizona State might have already mailed it in by that point, right? Like, we still have no idea. I mean, like, the NCAA should really just do everyone a solid and be like, we're not going to send the Herm notice of allegations until, you know, after the season's over. But if they, like, leak out or, you know, get released in the middle of the season, like, that could really mess with things.
The other thing, too, is the games they have at home. They get USC at home. That's interesting. Like Oregon State's always good for one game where they just like it's cold and it's foggy and the crowd is crazy and the chainsaw's going and like they're good for that once a year.
Well, they have the half stadium this year, right? Like they blew up the other half. Oh,
I forgot about that. Oh, man.
I mean, they get Colorado. They miss Arizona, which is, you know, like the one that you're like, I mean, that always helps. Like when you get the Colorado-Arizona combo platter, that really helps.
Yeah, double down on that, man. It's like,
yeah, I mean, but as you get towards the end of the season, like the games that, like, again, like, so they need to win one out of Boise, Fresno. They definitely need to pick up a win against Stanford, right?
Yeah.
They probably need to pick up a win against Wazoo. That would put them at 4 wins counting the FCS game. And then they just need to win 2 out of Colorado, Washington, California. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can't really count Washington State as like a guaranteed win. But there's a couple games that, like, I could see them, like, I don't think Washington's going to be, like, I think Washington's going to be a lot better than they were last year. I don't necessarily see Washington's being like a juggernaut, though.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
We've got them projected at 36. Like we've got Washington at home as about a 5-point favorite over Oregon State.
And what were you able to do on Washington last year, Rob? Run the football.
Right. I mean, and I'm not sure that that's fixed. Like, are you?
No. Oh no, not at all. Not at all.
Like I'm not sure they have the bodies. Okay. For a defensive line, even if they're switching scheme and not, you know, relying on, you know, 2 down linemen anymore.
So, like, in terms of players to watch, I mean, who jumps out for that? That's what's so beautiful about this offense, right? Because, like, it's Chance Nolan and Trey Lowe and Deshaun Fenwick. And I'm like, this is going to be one of the best offenses in the country. Or at least in the conference, you know, like there aren't a lot of stars on here.
Like, wouldn't you bet on them being a top? I mean, maybe not as quite the level they were last season, which was 16 overall. But I mean, I wouldn't expect them to drop below 25.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like that is, I mean, like that's why Jonathan Smith deserves many high fives, because this roster isn't great, but he's just able to put up points, and that running game is going to be good. And you got Mihalcek and.
I mean, it's whoever the, you know, the running back, whoever the main back turns out to be, and Musgrave, and the entire offensive line, and then Spates, like,
yeah, and right. That's it. Okay, all right, let's move on to Arizona, a team that should be improved, and let's do it right after this. All right, we're back. We're talking Arizona football here. Just a rough year last year. Rough freaking year. But like,
it was really like a true year zero, right? Like,
holy Moses, it was a year. And like the thing was, and like, and you're going to see this, I think, across all podcasting stream when you talk about Arizona, like they played hard, their quarterbacks were bad, but you could see the offense move.
They moved the football well.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't score points. But they moved the football.
That was a problem. So I was on the Quack 12 podcast talking about Fish. And one of the things that I talked about just the frustration that I saw with the red zone offense. I think that is an area where, like, even if you fix the quarterback, even if you get an upgrade, even if the offensive line improves, which I don't know if it will, I'm actually really worried about that. We'll get to that in a second. I want to see some play calling that isn't too cute by half, or just incompetent, because that Fish did a great job moving the ball from the 20-yard line to the 20-yard line when his quarterback wasn't throwing to the other team. Which is just a lot of things before getting to the end point there. But that red zone offense was pretty crappy. They do bring Jaden Delora, the second best quarterback in the Pac-12, Rob. Your thoughts?
I mean, holy crap. I mean, like, it's like you start with Jaden. I mean, like, so let's start with quarterback, right? Like Arizona's best quarterback last season in his best game threw 5 interceptions. Like, I was trying to explain to you, because people are like, no, South Carolina had the worst quarterback play in the country last season. And I'm like, maybe. Did they throw, like, Jordan McLeod threw 5 interceptions against Oregon. Like, Gunnar Cruz averaged below 6 yards an attempt.
Oh, my God.
And had 2 TDs and 3 interceptions. I mean, just unspeakable. Unspeakably hideous quarterback play last season. And look, McLeod, I mean, like, when we got to see McLeod when he if he avoided the interceptions, he was like a revelation.
Yeah.
Right. Like other than like, it's like, I mean, it is a little bit like other than, you know, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln, you know, like yeah. with Jordan McLeod and the interceptions. But yes, like other than the interceptions, he was fun and fine. That I, look, and I do want to say, like, I don't think the wide receivers were any good. And correct. I think that hurt your quarterback.
Yeah.
And I think whomever the quarterback was, and I think that hurt the offensive line. And I do want to say, like, for the most part, and I call this out on the preview videos, like sacks and sack percentage are an offensive line stat. I mean, not an offensive line, they're a quarterback stat and a wide receiver stat, right? Because like your quarterback's holding the damn ball too long waiting for people to get open, or he's not making decisions, right? And that's mostly true, I think, for like, so look, I mean, with Delora coming on potentially, you know, McLeod being healthy, like you're in a better spot, right? Like lots of things should work better. But yeah, I mean, like last season, you'd have to give what, Arizona like a D at quarterback? If that, yeah, maybe an F, yeah, I mean, probably yeah, an F. But the like the flip of that is like, you know, like now with Delora in there, McLeod had flashes last season. Like I would put them at like a B, right? Like, I mean, like this feels like for this team, a strength.
Yeah. For this team. Absolutely. I was joking about him being the second best quarterback in the Pac-12, but he does have a high floor. He's going to be frustrating. I mean, we've seen this, like we know who he is.
Right.
The one thing that's interesting, and I'm going to have to keep an eye on this, was that I'm reading more about Noah Fifita than Jordan McLeod. In terms of that, which makes me, I liked McLeod. I thought that if he doesn't get injured in that UCLA game, Arizona wins. Now there wasn't a lot of tape on him.
Right.
And Arizona completely revamped its offense when it played Oregon, when he played, which is why they were able to move the ball so quickly, but like we were still able to do it. So I just want to keep a look on that, because if Delora gets hurt, I do think that if McLeod is behind him and he is the solidified number two, he might just be a game player where he's just going to go out there and like, I mean, he can run. Hopefully, you know, hopefully that wound is healed. I think he broke his leg. I forget what it was last year. But if he's back 100%, like he adds something to this offense. And even when it was Gunnar Cruz, you could see like, oh, the tight end's open. Oh, the flat route was open.
Cruz could not make a decision.
No.
Save his life. But that's like, the other part, I mean, and when we evaluate like McLeod or any of the quarterbacks from last season, is like the coaching staff clearly thought they had a problem at wide receiver and tight end. And they brought in, it's like a line change.
Oh, for sure.
You know, at those positions. So like Arizona's received, like, I mean, we should, and I like the wide receiving coach hire that they made from San Jose State. Like, I think that they should, in theory, like the quarterback should be in a better position. In theory, the offensive line should not be having to protect for so long. It's not to say, like, I think there is one in particular glaring weakness on the offensive line in particular, but
yeah. Well, let's shift over to the wide receivers that are going to be catching the passes and the tight end. I think this is a strength also. And I mean, you have just some really interesting pieces. You get Jacob Cowing, one of the best, you know, wide receivers at the group of five level. And by the way, like sometimes you get those transfers and you're like, oh man, is he going to, like, he was somebody that there was a lot of teams that were really wanted him on their team.
Oh yeah. Like Oregon. I mean, there are a lot of teams that wanted him. His son is in Phoenix.
Yes. And it, we will gladly have him, both of them. You know, like,
thank goodness for that.
Jamari Joyner returns.
Yep.
You have a Kean Burnett, who I'm interested, you know, he's at like the tight end position. So he was like a 4-star USC commit that flipped. He followed Noah Fifita to Arizona. That's interesting. There's some interesting pieces here. The thing that makes me a little worried is the 5-star commit McMillan hasn't really been on the same page as Delora. So I
that's one of the ones that's like, Delora's got to figure that the F out. I mean, I think for everyone, right? Like he's really got to figure that. Some of it may be like McMillan's going to play a lot, right?
Yeah.
And he's a huge get for Arizona. You know, it may be some growing pains with him as well, but like if Delora is not looking for him, like he needs to be, right? Like that's somebody that I think Arizona not only needs to develop, like they need to keep him from transferring.
Yeah.
But you also have guys, I mean, like it's crazy is like they got in Kevin Green, who was the guy they got, you know, like, who's a, you know, high three star, AJ Jones, who's a bigger guy. Who I think was, they got, they may have flipped from UCLA or maybe at least was like competing against UCLA for that, but he's like another big guy. But like everyone transferred out, like nearly everyone except Joyner and Dorian Singer transferred out.
Yeah. And it was a, hey y'all, you better like, it'd be nice for you to find another spot. It wasn't a
dude like Mejon Wright, who we talked about a little bit, and Jed Fish name dropped a couple of times because he liked him so much. You know, he was on the scout team last season, had to sit out a year because of like, he did like a double transfer and transferred back to Arizona, is transferring again because he wasn't going to crack the rotation.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely a strength for them. I'm curious to see how it's complemented by the running game, though, right? Because, like, I thought Michael Wiley was fine. But, again, like, there's reinforcements. You got DJ Williams coming in. He was a four-star guy from Florida State, transferred. Got
Speed. I couldn't believe it when they took him. But that's, like, that's a pretty big get. Like, he ran pretty hard at Auburn and Florida State when he played.
It's like a sneaky pickup that kind of, you know, was late too. And there's been a couple of these for different teams where you're like, oh snap, they got that guy. Like the linebacker from UAB for Washington. You're like, oh snap, that guy like transferred in the program. That's awesome. They like Rayshon Luke and Stevie Rocker. Like I don't think it's a strength because I also think the offensive line is bad. But I think it's going to be better than last year when you saw a lot of Drake Anderson, the Northwestern transfer. And I was like, oh, like, oh, it's Drake. They handed it to Drake Anderson. Like, you know, that it's just like, here's your oatmeal, Bryant. Oh, thanks, man. You know, like that kind of was the vibe with Anderson. Like, and look, tough kid, you know, like I think he'll be a good blocker or something. But I just he wasn't going to jump off the page and drag Arizona's, you know, running game to anywhere where it needed to be.
Right.
I don't think you have anybody on the team now that's going to do this, but so I think it's a weakness, but I'm curious what you think.
I mean, I think it's pretty good. I actually think the room overall is pretty good. They signed Jonah Coleman, who is a high three star. Who's been getting a lot of touches in camp. You have Rayshon Luke, who is probably going to get used more sort of everywhere, especially like in the return game, I think early on. As he probably needs to put on some weight before they really use him too much at running back. But they certainly have, I mean, like, yeah, like a lot of these guys, like, but too, last year, like, I don't think anyone took Arizona all that seriously when it came to throwing the football around. Like, I think the running game could get better just by having a passing game that anyone actually respects.
That'd be nice. And it's an interesting room. But I think the biggest problem is when you flip over to the offensive line, which I think is a total weakness when you look at what's going on here. And it's different from you, like we talked about UCLA last week, Rob, when we were looking at it was like, oh snap, there's no tackles here. And I'm really frightened about the depth, but Chip Kelly has done a decent job with bad talent on that line. Yeah. I do not trust Brennan Carroll and Fish yet on that front because, and like we at Arizona, you've seen a number of really good offensive line coaches, Joe Gilbert and Malchek, like both make, you know, lemonade out of lemons, you know, and I just, that was not the case. It hasn't been the case the last 2 years with Brennan Carroll. And I just don't see a change here. I think Jordan Morgan at your left tackle is good, but And they really like Jonah Sevenea, who is the freshman.
And he blew up late. People thought he might actually get upgraded to a four-star because he really dominated at one of the last like all-star games that they had.
But the problem is, even with that, Rob, like you're starting a true freshman at guard.
It's better at guard than at tackle. But like, I think the real problem on the line is Peyton Fears.
Yeah.
Like the right tackle. I mean, somewhat depth too. But like Peyton Fears, like you go back and watch that Washington tape, like he can't handle speed rusher. Like he just can't. And I mean, I don't think it was injury. He played the most snaps of anyone last season. He just really struggles. And that's my biggest concern, is him out at right tackle. I don't think, like, the fact that they don't have a better option is a really big concern. Like, I think Morgan's going to be pretty good. Like, he was injured a lot of last season and played through. I think Savanea, he's got the size already. You know, like, he may not have the strength quite there yet, but I like at guard, he should be okay. I'm not saying he's going to be like, I'm not like, oh, he'll be all Pac-12. Like, I highly doubt that. He will probably play all season and make like the freshman team, you know, because he played all year. But Donovan seems fine too. Like, and I think they have better backups on the inside and like Hand and Duvall. But like, really, my biggest concern is Peyton Fears.
Yeah. And Duvall might not be like, we'll see. Like, I need to read up on the camp to see if he's there, because he was in the doghouse.
That's right.
Three-star transfer from Baylor, who, if he plays, like, could be solid. But yikes, if he's not there, it's just you're one injury away from an awful, awful line.
Right.
You know, like, some like, you look at USC, you go, oh, man, they're one injury away from, you know, there being a problem. For Arizona, it's like you're one injury away from, like, please light seven candles for your quarterbacks, because they're already, you know, running around.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, flipping over the defense, some good news. I think this defensive line is a strength, and it's been a strength for the last couple of years, which has just been a revelation for anybody that's watched Arizona football for the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like, I mean, even going back to like Mike Stoops last season, like, they couldn't get really good pressure. It's been like a frickin' decade. God, that's a depressing thought. But there's some real positives, right? Like, I mean, like, Bars, I think, I mean, he had 8 tackles for a loss last season, should be fully healthy and good to go. I mean, he seems like a guy that could really make a difference, you know, like, and I don't, it's not just us saying that, like, you know, like, he's somebody that's getting called out by a lot of people as potentially having a good year. And then it's like JB Brown's back. Maybe, I mean, I don't know where he sits. You know, like, the Harris brothers are there at the outside too. Hunter Eccles is there. But with like Paris Shand and Savea, you know, potentially like rotating in by Bars, it does feel like they actually have a little bit of depth. And like, weirdly, like, God, like, this stuff is always like, I mean, I'm so tired of this with Arizona. Like, Jacob I can't even pronounce his last name. Anyway, the guy they got from Mater D, he was a walk-on that they got. Now, he did have offers from like UCLA. He got some run with the ones. Like, people are talking about him potentially getting some playing time in. Like, I think the depth is just a lot better at defensive line. And I think that we should see some production, you know, some better production out of some of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, like, and it's kind of like, if you're a UCLA player or a UCLA fan and you hear Chip Kelly talk about their walk-on program, like, it's the same thing at Arizona, where it's just been, oh God, it's been like 7 years where everybody's starting to walk-ons.
Don't talk to me about walk-ons.
Yeah. Now Congica, I think it's Congica, and it came from, you know, Modern Day is like one of the best football programs in the state of California. So UCLA offer, we'll see. Like, what's the more important part to your point, Rob, is that like Jalen Harris has been in the program for a number of years, and his brother is a 4-star recruit. Hunter Eccles is going to do much better in this Arizona offense than he did at USC. There are bodies here to be able to put together a coherent line. And again, everything's relative. Like, is it a strength compared to Oregon's? No, but it's a strength for Arizona, the fact that they have like a competent offense, defensive line with a little bit of depth to it. That makes me excited. The linebackers, however, I'm worried, right? Like, Jerry Roberts, Anthony Solomon, and then it's just kind
Malik
of,
Reed. Malik Reed's been getting a lot of run. You know, then I think another former walk-on, Amon Allen.
Oh, great.
Has been getting some run at the ones. I mean, there's like, I don't think they have anybody. Like, I mean, they signed Sterling Lane, who was a 4-star, but he's expected to be more of like an edge player instead of a linebacker. You know, like, I don't think they brought in anybody else. Mercier from Utah, I have not heard him mentioned at all. in any of the write-ups from, you know, the days at camp. And it, and like, unlike prior years, like, you know, the beat writers are there at camp.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they actually can see what's going on.
So yeah, I think it's likely the Wisconsin transfer, Malik Reed, and, you know, maybe Anthony Solomon in there, but like, I haven't heard Solomon's name a lot either.
Yeah, this is going to be a weakness. I think it's a problem. You're going to have a good defensive line and then linebackers that are questionable. I mean, remember Jerry Roberts was a transfer from like Bowling Green. So that's your starting, and he wasn't like an All-American. He was a transfer from Bowling Green. So now he's like a
I mean, his name's been kicked around too. Yeah, like he's been in there, and he and Malik Reed, his name's been kicked around a lot. But it's weird. Like I feel like I should have like been seeing Solomon's name more, but I haven't.
Yeah, yeah, we might have to flip him around. You know, moving over the corners, I actually think this is for Arizona a strength. Christian Roland.
I think the corners are good.
Yeah, yeah. Christian Roland Wallace is still here. Again, he was somebody that USC was after, and they made a real push for him late, and he's been pretty solid for the last, I think, 3 years at Arizona. They're pretty excited about him, even playing as a true freshman, and where he took his lumps. But he's a decent corner that will likely be like either honorable mention or second team, probably Pac-12 for Arizona. Trayton Stukes, like a walk-on, but he's pretty good.
No, that's the thing. It's like people were talking about this last year. It's like, he's actually pretty darn good.
Yeah. And also in camp, still getting what he continues to get the press that like, hey, like Stukes is good. He's had a really good camp. Same thing in spring. So I think you're going to have a decent, like, he's good enough to beat out the 4-star Isaiah Rutherford from the transfer from Notre Dame, who is going to be like that third wheel. You got DJ Warnell, like Gunnar Maldonado came over for, like, it's just, there's enough bodies. But
Rutherford
here
is not getting talked about. Like the guys getting talked about behind them are like Ephesians Prysock, who is a legit 6'3" corner that they signed, who's a real high, I mean, he's a 4-star that they got, that I think they flipped from USC. And then who's their other one? They had signed another big corner, Takario Davis, who's 6'2" in there. And like, Dwayne Walker can coach in the secondary. Like, in Arizona's weakness yesterday, you know, was not full on not last season at the corners. It was at the nickel and some of the safeties.
Yeah. That's the problem. Like, I think the corners are a strength. The safeties have been a disaster for Arizona for the last 6 years, and they return Christian Young and Jackson Turner.
Well, the other Young's gone. Was it Jaden Young? Like, he sucked. He couldn't cover.
Yeah. I don't know.
Christian Young can hit and he can cover, but like, yeah, they really struggled with when they, because you're going to spend most of your time in nickel, and that, like, that was the problem last year. It was like their nickel wasn't good, and then, you know, the other Young couldn't cover it all.
Yeah, keep a lookout for that.
They moved somebody over. Like, I'm trying to remember who they moved over.
Was it Maldonado?
The nickel spot.
Oh, the nickel spot.
I think they did move over Maldonado to take the nickel. But anyway, I don't think they'll be as bad as they were last season. Like, they have like significant reinforcements. and at the very least, like, you can move over, you know, like one of the guys like Rutherford or somebody. Like, they've got enough depth that like, I think someone will stick. And like we talked about with, you know, where I think they like Prysock and Davis, like those guys could also, you know, come in and play. Now, they may not, like, they're big bodies, so you may not really want them, you know, on a on somebody in the slot, but yeah, it'll be interesting to, like, I think that there's a lot more to feel confident about with this squad than before.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up. Yeah, I know. Well, let's wrap it up here. Who are some players that, you know, not, there aren't a lot of people watching Arizona football, so enlighten the entire audience. Who should they be keeping an eye out?
I mean, it's Cowing, right? Like, he's your number one guy to keep an eye on. And then McMillan, right? Like, I mean, the biggest Arizona signing in years, right? Like, I think the best signing that Arizona's had in its history. right? And then Burnett, if he gets on there. And then Barr, I would say Barr is in the secondary as well as Christian Roland Wall, or Barr is on the defense and then Christian Roland Wallace.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some legitimate pieces on this team. It's just, there's legitimate holes too. So it's, you know, like, again, everything is relative. I mean, this team's probably going to win three games. And looking at their schedule here, Rob, it's, what are the, it's funny because like the question is kind of stupid. What are the hinge games? And it's like Colorado, North Dakota State, right? Like, that's about it. It's a brutal schedule. Maybe Arizona State. I think that Territorial Cup can be really competitive this year.
I mean, look, they got to go beat San Diego State.
Yeah,
they have to. I mean, it's on the road at their new stadium. Like tickets are sold out. You know, like, but San Diego, like, I mean, that on this schedule is a winnable game for them. Like, they're San Diego State. The offense has been terrible for years. They're projected to be, San Diego State's almost a 5-point favorite at home against Arizona in Baderank. Like, that's a game they got to go win, and they got to have, like, they're going to have a shot against North Dakota State. Like, I mean, that's not like North Dakota State is a lower division team. They're not going to show up and just blow the doors off them, right? Like last year's Arizona squad, they would absolutely do that too, right? But then it's like for the, like, this team is not going to a bowl, and that's okay. But like it's Cal, keep an eye there, right? Not because because Cal, like, I don't think any of us are like big believers in Cal's offense suddenly making a big turnaround. It's Colorado. And then there's like a couple, then it's going to get rough. But then you've got like, look, I don't think UCLA is going to be so overwhelming that they're going to blow the doors off Arizona or Washington State or ASU, right? So it's like you pick up one or two in the back half there, right? Like a successful season for Arizona is getting to like 4 wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, and you could like, I like, but they're this team for what we know right now. You just want to look and see, like, if you look here, there's one, count North Dakota State, there's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, likely 7 games on the schedule where they're going to be, have a shot to really be in it.
Yeah. If you're an Arizona fan, 3 and competitive, I think that would be the expectations. I think 3 and competitive and some of the, like, it doesn't even have to be competitive against like Oregon. It could be competitive against UCLA and Washington State, you know, like just being able to, and Washington, you know, those types of games. But all right, Rob, we've got an hour and 20 minutes. Let's wrap it up here. Anything else to plug before we tune out?
No, I'm done with the videos. I might do like Washington, because some Washington fans asked me about a preview video for their team. I'll decide that when I get back from backpacking. But check out Sharp College Football as we get it towards the season. I'm excited. It should be a lot of fun. I'm ready for football.
Yep, me too. Thanks for tuning in. We will do 2 more teams next week. We'll dive more into fall camp, and we'll catch you then.